If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Survivor specialist John and McKenna are back, except not really. McKenna's not here this week. She couldn't make it. So instead, I am joined by the fantastic Celestina Hendrickson. Celestina, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Life is good. I mean, especially now that there's news about the 90-minute episodes. I mean, the Survivor gods were answering, and they delivered. So I'm happy.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic news coming out this week that we actually get 90-minute episodes next season. But hey, we have a whole episode of season 44 to look at today and look and see what it's pulling on from previous seasons of Survivor. So, Celestina, I've said a lot about this season so far. This is our first time having you able to say anything about it. How are you feeling about 44 so far?
Yeah, I'm better. You know, I feel like when I first start a season of Survivor, I'm always a little hesitant because people who know me, I'm very much an old school Survivor purist. So I'm very particular about what I want in my Survivor. But I am pleasantly surprised. I feel like it's definitely picking up post-merge, which I think is always exciting. There's some interesting characters, which are actually kind of rootable, which I love. That's always what I look for. And I feel like last season I wasn't rooting for anybody. So the fact that I'm rooting for a few people and I like several people is a good sign that the season is going well. So I am kind of enjoying it. Yeah.
Excellent. I love hearing that. And I think it seems to be the general consensus of the season. People are kind of enjoying this, especially this post-merge season, which gets really interesting when we talk about the episode we're going to talk about on the Patreon a little later. But this post-merge has definitely felt a lot more like old school Survivor. And we're getting moments like that, even in these early moments in the episode. Like last night, we get this Carolyn blindside response. So it's a very emotional response. And, you know, it's kind of unfair that the cast is really painting Carolyn as this very emotional player in my eyes, because that does seem to be what they're doing. But we get them coming back from tribal council. Carolyn immediately calling out Jam Jam and Carson, two people who she thought she was working completely in lockstep with, and they've blindsided her this time. So it really got the two of us thinking, okay, what are some of these moments that are really like this? Like, where do we have someone coming back and we just have all these different responses to them, where we have this emotional response from Carolyn, we have an emotional response, a less emotional response from Danny, but even Danny evoking, you know, those infamous words of who voted for me. Yeah. And so we hearken back onto things like Lex in Africa after T-Bird throws that vote on him.
Iconic, yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, we have Rupert's big "Who voted for me?" Moment in Pearl Islands as well. I don't know. How do you think Danny's response here compares to those like more iconic moments in Survivor history?
Yeah, I mean, it's what I love about it is that it's giving me that old school vibe, you know, of you remember those moments. You remember Rupert and you remember Lex. Like those are iconic early seasons of Survivor moments. And you don't get that a lot anymore. So when stuff like that happens in the new age of Survivor, it is exciting. So I think from that standpoint, it makes people like me a little bit nostalgic and you're like, ooh, this is what I love in Survivor. I love that kind of like mystery of, you know, someone votes for someone and they have to lie to cover it up. So I really enjoy that. Comparison wise, I mean, I don't think it's as iconic, obviously, because I think that you're talking about characters like Lex and Rupert. If you compare the three of them together, you know, to fans, people would be like, Danny who, you know, even though he is on this current season. So I think from that standpoint, obviously those other ones are more iconic. And I think just with age in general, things just are more iconic because they're older, not necessarily maybe because they're better. So, but I think from a nostalgic standpoint, it was great to see and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think the real big difference between those responses that we go back into those early seasons for and this response, even though Danny, you can tell, like, he's got a little emotion. He's curious to know who voted for him and everything and won't really let it die. It comes up again later in the episode as well. I think what we're seeing is a much more level-headed approach to the question of who voted for him. And the difference is we get the blow-ups from Lex and Rupert, right? We get that real loud emotional response. And with Danny, we still get this emotional response, and you can tell it's bugging him because he brings it up multiple times, but he's not letting the emotions control him here. He's letting them, he's sussing it out. He's feeling it out. Yes, he ultimately comes to the wrong conclusion. You have to imagine right after he gets voted out that Franny can then confirm who voted for him because she can confirm that she didn't vote for him. So it'll be interesting in Danny's exit press to see if he even believed Franny when she tells her that it wasn't him and that it must have been Heidi based on like the way the plans were unfolding. But I love these type of moments. Like you were saying, like these moments that are so evocative of these like bigger moments in Survivor history, because it feels so much more like a natural Survivor game when we get this type of response from people. We want people to be upset when things don't go their way. And we don't need them to be so upset that it's uncomfortable. We want them to be upset and then like try to figure it out, right? It's that mystery aspect of Survivor which makes the game so interesting, where everyone thinks they're working with perfect information and then they find out they're not, and they have to like try to figure out where that lack of information came from.
I mean, you hit the nail on the head with that. I think it's so important to think about too how Survivor has evolved, and now the reaction to this would be very different than a reaction that we would have in season three, or a reaction that we would get like in another season. I mean, in thinking about it, I mean, all of these people are game players, you know, their mind is on the game and they think about, you know, emotionally, I want to scream and I want to react, but I know that I'm thinking ahead and I have to be strategic about this. And I think that that's so important to think about, because that is a difference that we would see. I mean, in old seasons, people are just very reactive. They're like, I don't care. This is who I am. And now in Survivor, you see, yes, I am who I am, but there's also a game mindset and mentality. And I think that that's a very interesting comparison. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Well, while we're still like kind of talking about Pearl Islands and stuff, you had mentioned that there was kind of an instance with Heidi lying about this vote to Danny that reminded you of a moment from Pearl Islands. You want to just dive into that a little more?
Yeah, so it was interesting because the first scene, just the setting, I think even just the vibes gave me just a Pearl Island vibe, and I didn't really know why. And then when I started thinking about it, Heidi was talking about, oh, well, it wasn't me, and I'm going to go to my grave and be like, it wasn't me, you know? And I'm like, that reminds me of someone. Oh, that reminds me of Sandra, because in the episode right after Rupert was voted out, you know, and the whole fish being thrown into the water, Sandra, like, they all pinned it on, on Krista, and Sandra was like, I'm just keeping quiet. You know, it wasn't me. Nobody suspected, you know, and everybody suspected Krista. And then I think in this episode, did Heidi say, I think it was Jam Jam, right? That.
Yeah. So eventually after a few conversations with a few people, Danny does come to the conclusion that he believes it was Jam Jam that wrote his name.
Exactly. And so she's going with that. She's like, yep, that's it. And immediately he's like, I believe her, you know? So it just had that kind of, and it's interesting that it was that episode. I'm sure that there's probably other episodes of Survivor that come to mind for other people when they compare that scene. But for me, that was the season that kind of, it just gave me Pearl Islands vibes for some reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting with the way that Danny kind of approaches this, because he believes Heidi when Heidi tells him, no, it wasn't me, everything like that. And he says, no, it must have been Jam Jam. And it's funny because I was talking about how he almost has this logical process that he's doing when he's doing this investigation to figure out who did this to him. Logically, it shouldn't be Jam Jam. It doesn't make sense if you, like everyone else seems to be thinking that the Tika 3 are working together, why would Jam Jam be one rogue vote for you, right? So either he doesn't believe Tika is as terrifying and controlling as they can be, which is possible. He does seem to be downplaying that a lot in the season. Yeah. But it's either that or he's still not quite getting there with his logic. He's taking leaps with his logic that despite there being red flags of nope, doesn't make sense. And I think Heidi does the best thing possible in the first time she brings it up, where she's like, oh, it must have been Franny. Because the easiest thing you can do in Survivor is blame the person who's not there.
Yeah. Right? Exactly. Yeah. I agree. I mean, I don't know if this is a common thing, but I was at my watch party in Seattle and I was like, you know what? I'm going to get on the Heidi bandwagon. I think that she's not getting a lot of love right now, but I mean, I think that what she's doing for the placement that she's in and kind of the social standing that she's in, I think she's doing the best she can do. And I think that if you kind of take a look at it, it's she's actually doing pretty good. She's gotten a lot of votes, but she's still here. People trust her, you know? I mean, not everybody, but I don't know. She's doing good. So I think she's a sleeper. Definitely.
Yeah, and we're definitely at that point in the game where it seems like Heidi is getting a little more attention. We see her as one of the vote recipients in this episode itself. But I agree. I think Heidi is playing a great game so far. And it's almost unfortunate that there are so many large personalities on this cast that she's a little more hidden. She's come out a lot in the last couple of episodes, but we didn't get a lot of Heidi before the merge, because we have so many big personalities to focus on instead. The next scene we get in the episode is, you know, the kumbaya scene on the beach where everyone's meditating. It's great. And we have Jamie just talking about how, you know, the game's hard because you are making genuine connections with people. And at the same time, you're still playing a game where you have to portray people. And I think it's just such a great thing to hold on. And it doesn't necessarily harken back to any specific moment in Survivor history, but it's something we see. We see people get super upset, right? And it's even if we go back to All Stars and we see how upset Lex and Kathy get with Rob betraying them and everything, that's that balance of friendship and game, right? Mm-hmm. And while we don't have people sitting here, we don't have people sitting there meditating with each other with this voiceover going on in every season, this is something everyone kind of has to think about when they're playing Survivor. And it's nice having that moment that reflects on that, which is that unsaid thing about the game that happens season over season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's sort of another iconic feature of Survivor is kind of amidst the chaos that is the game, you have these centering moments of bonding. And, you know, there's small snippets sometimes, but it's great to kind of get that, especially from an audience perspective, to see, oh my gosh, they're bonding. It's, you know, and I'm sure all of them are close in their own way because of, you know, being able to have these types of moments. And despite, you know, I voted for you at Tribal, we're able to kind of sit and, you know, have that kumbaya moment. And kind of Carolyn even alluded to that later at Tribal of like, you know, you're at each other's heads, but then, you know, there's some days where you're just, you're sitting and meditating. And I mean, we see forms of this and like a lot of seasons of Survivor, they love to cast someone who's a yogi or, you know, someone who's, who loves to meditate, who kind of leads this. I mean, from scenes like panoramic scenes of like Coach, you know, doing his like, you know, yoga on the beach, like those moments, or even like Joe teaching his tribe to do yoga. Those things are a Survivor staple. And I'm sure we're going to see them again moving forward.
Yeah. I think they're one of those things that help people pass the time on the island when they're not gaming and they need like that centering moment. And clearly production loves casting people to lead these type of scenes because they do over and over again, where, whether it be like as far back as like Otis in Panama, all the way up to Jamie this season, right? Like we have these characters who are more involved in like yoga and or meditation of some sort, and they just help to center the tribe. And it's nice because it does give us these human moments amongst the gameplay. But let's get back to the gameplay, because Carolyn has a conversation with Jam Jam afterwards and they're talking, and Carolyn agrees, and Carson comes along too. Carolyn agrees, you know what? I was acting a little irrational last night. This is, because I was hurt by what you did, but it's still best for us to work together. And it kind of reminds me of a couple of big moments in Survivor where it's tough because it's really hard to see when we have an alliance blindside one of its members by voting out someone they're closer to than the rest of the alliance is. And then that person still decides to work with that alliance moving forward. So there are a couple of key moments that I thought of that really kind of articulate this. I think one of them, of course, is Amanda in Micronesia after the Aussie boot, where, you know, everyone kind of realizes we have to take a shot at Aussie. He's too strong. He's going to keep winning challenges. We need to take a shot, but we can't tell Amanda, because if we tell Amanda, Aussie's going to know to play his idol. So that happens, and rather than Amanda kind of being on the outs, and like we do see her, you know, being targeted a little later on when she has to use the idol to save herself, but she still kind of goes right back into that Black Widow Brigade and works closely with them.
Yeah. I mean, and sometimes I think it's a lot of times for self-preservation. I think it's like, you know, and that's, I mean, that's mostly when you see the situation, it is for self-preservation. Maybe they have a numbers advantage and they're like, it doesn't make sense to switch over. I'm just going to be targeted after. And they say, you know what, this is something I can rekindle and I can kind of make my way back up the ladder. And sometimes they know that, especially if there's a showmance involved or like a relationship, they know maybe it's not personal. Maybe I realize that, you know, us being associated with each other was a huge threat in the game and he's gone. It's one less person I have to, like, you know, work with later because they were a big threat. And so I think that in that moment, they're thinking game, you know, they're like self-preservation. Yeah. I just got to move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think another big instance of this, I think the one that I think this really reminds me of is the right after the LJ boot in Cagayan, where Tony leaves Trish out of the vote, doesn't tell her. And if that entire vote is driven by this fact that Tony is scared at how close Trish and LJ are getting, right? They're getting really close. They really get along together. And that's kind of like, it reflects what we saw last week with Carolyn and Franny, where they were kind of having that like mutual bonding relationship. They were getting really close because of that. And in that instance, Trish, of course, still works with Tony moving forward until her own ouster. And that's where we kind of see Carolyn here. It's like, you betrayed me. You took out someone who I was going back onto that, the meditation scene we had, you took away someone who I had a genuine connection with, someone who I was like, yes, I had the potential of working with them, but more importantly, like I connected with them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you're on the island, you need someone like that. Yeah. And despite the fact that Tony took LJ away from Trish, who was also an ally of his own, right? Trish still knows the best thing for her game. It's like you said, the self-preservation thing. Knows the best thing for her game is to continue working with Tony. And that's what we see Carolyn doing here with Jan and Carson. Just, okay, yes, you betrayed me. You voted out someone who I was connecting with. But the best thing for my game is working with you moving forward.
Yeah. And actually, I'm going to give a little reference to the recent season of Australian Survivor, because I just watched it. It's fresh on my mind. But this exact thing happens actually twice with the same person, with the Spice Girl Alliance. I won't give the ending away, obviously, because I know that some people probably haven't watched it. But there's specific scenes where this big alliance that's happening with George, Shawnee, and Liz. And Shawnee's voted out by George, and Liz is pissed. She's like, I am so upset at George, but it doesn't make sense to go with someone else. So she goes back with George and, you know, continues this alliance. And then again, he does the same thing. He votes out someone that, you know, they're aligned with, and she's pissed, but, you know, she goes with him again because she knows I need to preserve myself in this game. And she sees the end goal and she's like, I can do this. I can recover from this. There is a path. There's a better pathway with me if I work with George than if I work with other people. So that's just a very recent season, but it reminded me clear cut with this.
Absolutely. And it really goes to show, I really enjoy the fact that the editors kept this scene in that shows Carolyn's thinking and her justification for it, because it really contrasts the claims of her being incredibly emotional that happened at Tribal Council later, where we are seeing her take onus of her emotions here and say, you know what, I have to do what's best for my game, which is like what some people might view as like the opposite of that emotional reaction. And clearly it works, because she comes out really, really good in this episode, if you ask me.
Yeah.
And now we're at this point where this Tika 3 are talking, and they're just like, okay, we get through this one vote. We're a majority. We control things from here. Now, I will note, 3 is not a majority of 6. Kind of bugged me a little bit. They kept saying that, but it's fine. I understand what they're saying, is that they will have to be the tribe with the most people from a single tribe on it at that point, so they can... And because they are half the votes, like they pretty much get a good chance at like controlling where things go. But, and McKenna and I have touched on it previously, but this isn't the first time we've seen a tribe that was decimated, that was put to a very, gone to very small numbers. And like we see it a lot in the new era when there are only 5 people, or it's only 6 people in the starting tribes anyways. But where tribes are decimated and they get to this point, and they are bonded together so much and they stick together so much that they can overcome the odds. We see it in Cook Islands with the IZ4. We see it in, I mean, begrudgingly, we see it in Samoa with the Foa Foa 4. This is really the first time we've seen it with 3, because we've also seen it with 2 in the Philippines with Matt Singh. And it's just this idea of seeming so innocuous and like letting people go at it is something we've seen in Survivor over and over again. When we compare Tika to those other 3 ones that we've made reference to, now of course we don't know the end result yet, so we don't know if a Tika actually wins the season, but like, how are you comparing them to those other underdog tribe stories that we have?
Yeah, it's so interesting because they're all so different in their, you know, in their own ways. Like with Foa Foa, they were like decimated because, you know, I mean, I think a big commonality is they're decimated because they keep constantly losing, you know, and I think that, I mean, that's the biggest factor that makes them the most similar. But the people who are in those situations, I think, are what make it interesting and unique and dynamic, and that you can choose, you know, okay, we're decimated. Once we go to the tribal, I'm going to integrate myself into, you know, the tribe and try to like figure out how to maneuver my way out of this. But there's a lot of value. And I think people wanting to stick together and saying, you know what, we actually have, even though we're a minority, we have power in the fact that we are three people that can be an ally to the larger group. Some of the people are gamers, especially in the newer season. They want to go to tribal. They want to see changes being made. And they're like, these, and especially with the eclectic group that is Tika, I think that it definitely makes it interesting because they want to play the game. They're not just being like, we'll do anything to for self-preservation. They're actually like, what can we do to actually get into this? And a lot of it also has to do with luck, you know, like, I know with the I24, they kept winning and that's how they basically stayed intact versus Foafoa. They kept losing, but when they got into the situation, they just took it day by day and got really lucky that people were voting with them. So it really is at the end of the day about how you kind of, what your strategy is moving forward. And some of it has to do with luck.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when we look at this, it's really interesting because if we look at this new era and you think about it, people aren't with each other as long. It's a shorter game. It's only 26 days, right? So you would think you would almost incentivize people to work less in tribes and intermingle between that. That's the purpose of having three tribes is so that there are less connections so that we don't have pagongings like we've had in the past. And instead, what we see, I think, is these smaller tribes are almost incentivizing people to stick together stronger, because that's been the storyline this entire season so far, right? Is we haven't been talking about these different alliances. We've been talking about Tika versus Ratu versus Sokka, right? Like these tribes are sticking together, and that's been the entire thing driving this narrative. So it's almost like, yes, you come in with the lesser numbers here, but especially in 44, where they're coming in with the lesser numbers, and you have a tribe that hasn't voted anyone out since the first day of the game. And well, I guess it was the second day of the game, but still. And then you have another tribe that has like equal strong numbers. They've only voted one person out, right? People, when they're playing Survivor, are chomping at the bit. That's what we see in Samoa when at the merge tribe, like Eric Cardona goes instead of anyone from Foafoa, because you're chomping at the bit. You want to get rid of these people you've been stuck with that you've just like aren't getting along with. And yes, 44 has all these twists and turns that make it harder to get people out, right? We have Mergatory, we had a half tribal after that, but in the end we're seeing people wanting to play their game, but they're still wanting to stay tight with the people they're tight with in tribes. It's an interesting dynamic that I think comes from this 26 day game that I don't think, like, I think is working opposite what the intention of it is. Because I think the intention of it is less people, swap them up, we get them to emerge earlier so they're all together earlier, and that way they'll want to work with each other. It seems like we're almost driving people apart more because of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that also the factor of the three tribes versus two tribes can also make a difference in it, because when you have three tribes, you already have less members of the tribe already on a tribe. With Foafoa, they started as a full tribe and they got decimated. So in that regard, it looks, I feel like from a, an audience perspective, it looks more impressive because they're like, oh my gosh, they really got decimated. That's a big tribe. And they were able to maneuver it. And it was from the start to the finish. Whereas like there was already a little bit of tribes anyway. And so I feel like that kind of matters as well and is worth noting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's keep moving on in the episode. Let's get to this immunity challenge. This last gasp is an iconic Survivor challenge that everyone remembers. Everyone was so excited to see it come back last season in season 43. But let me tell you, Survivor World, Celestina, before 43, this challenge has only happened three times in Survivor history.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's one of those things. McKenna and I were mentioning it with, what challenge was it? There are a couple of challenges that McKenna and I have mentioned it with where it seems like these challenges should happen more and more, and they've happened a lot, or they're like recent and that's why we remember them. But a lot of times it's neither. And Last Gasp is kind of one of those ones. And I think like if we look at Last Gasp, the first time it's ever played is in Palau. I mean, Tom wins because Tom wins like almost everything in that season. But it's also a very iconic episode because it's the episode where the loser of Last Gasp has to go to Exile Island. So it's the episode where Janu quits Palau. It's Janu is under the grate, decides she can't do it, gets out, goes to Exile, comes back. He's like, I don't want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think that automatically places it really high in our minds as like an iconic challenge.
Yeah.
The next time we see it is in Micronesia, which is one of the like, you know, most loved seasons of Survivor. That's Jason winning that. That's at the Merge. And then the next time we see it is actually the episode we're going to be talking about on the Patreon podcast. Celestine is going to join me again this week because McKenna still can't make it. And we're going to be talking about episode 9 of Karamoan. Yes, I know. Karamoan of all seasons, which in my opinion is a little more maligned than it should be. It has a fantastic post-merge. And luckily we're going to the post-merge because Last Gasp is the challenge in it. And the end of that episode kind of applies to something else we're going to talk about a little later. But in Karamoan, it's the second merge challenge. It's and Brenda wins it, right? And we see in Karamoan that just like in 44 when Jam Jam wins and Jam Jam doesn't know he won, you know, people jump in the water to tell him. Same thing happens in Karamoan with Brenda. And I was watching the way these people tell these people that they've won. And like, I don't know if I would ever believe it if someone just jumped in the water. And especially in Karamoan, Eddie and Reynolds jump in the water to tell Brenda, and they essentially just like start drowning her by splashing water over her face.
Yeah. I know. And I'm always thinking too, like, can you feel movements? Like, what if you're sitting, you're doing this challenge and you feel a movement and you're like, oh, that's somebody telling me I like won. And then they get out and they're like, oh no. I mean, I'm sure that probably won't happen, but I just am like, I'm sure you could feel movements, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those weird things. Then, of course, we had 43 last season where Carla and Owen win. This was the weird episode where three people got immunity because Cody had to bet on the outcome. And then Carla and Owen outlasted the challenge. So they're like, okay, you both win. Glad to see that they kind of made adjustments to it this time so that it seemed like it was a little deeper, a little further off shore. Mm-hmm. And they started it with the water a little lower. So by the time it creeps up and it gets to them, they're already feeling the cold. We saw it with Lauren, right? We saw she's already feeling the cold before it even gets anywhere near covering her face, and she has to tap out because of it. Good choice. So, Celestine, how do you feel about Last Gasp? This is the fifth time we've seen it. How do you like this challenge? Is this a challenge? Do you think you could do this challenge?
Oh, God. I actually I hate this challenge not because, it's iconic, and I like anything that's iconic, I'm about it. Just from like a uncomfortable standpoint, that's why I hate it, because I could not do this. If I was doing it, I would sit out of the challenge. Like, I don't want to not breathe. I'm fine at swimming. I'm fine at holding my breath for a second, but it just makes me feel so uneasy. So every time I watch it, I'm like watching it on the So from that standpoint, no, but from an iconic standpoint, yeah. You know, I mean, I like being able to kind of see reoccurring challenges that you're like, oh my gosh, it's this challenge, like that elicits that type of reaction. And I think this is that challenge because I go to my watch party and everybody's like, yeah, I love this challenge. It's my favorite challenge. So I love being able to see people excited about challenges that are iconic or they haven't seen for a little bit. And I do actually kind of like that we don't see it every season, because when it does come, it is kind of special to be like, oh yeah, this challenge is back.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Now, before we move on from the challenge, Carson made a comment about practicing this in his bathtub. Do you think he actually practices in his bathtub?
I wouldn't. If it's Carson, I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised, but I think he was just making the joke because he had, built this 3D printer. I think he was just running with it. I think he was cognizant of the thought process everyone was having when he said he 3D printed all the puzzles, but
I'm sure what he did. I don't think he actually practiced, but I think he probably is in his bathtub and he's like, oh, this is like Survivor. You know what I mean? Like something small, but I don't think he actually was like super practicing like he did with the puzzle.
Yeah. So after this immunity challenge, we get to the you know, the scramble, everyone, Jam Jam wins the immunity challenge, and everyone's like, well, I guess we're not voting out Jam Jam. So we get to the point where everyone's kind of coming up with plans. They're thinking, okay, let's vote out Carson, but we'll tell the Tikas that we're splitting the votes between the two Ratus who are left, which, I mean, if we're being real, there are a lot of parallels to this episode of Cara Mullen we're going to be talking about tomorrow, because that one was also just focused on, okay, we're going to vote out someone in this group of people that we're a little scared of. In that case, like, there was the targeting of Andrea, and we're going to tell them it's a split between Reynold and Eddie. So we see a lot of those type of conversations happening. We see quite a bit of, you know, people like formulating plans. We get that moment of like Jamie and Lauren talking about how they can control the vote now, because, which is funny because like Tika's been controlling everything, but now they're kind of the ones in the middle who get to decide which way things go. And then we get to Tribal Council. And now Tribal Council did remind us of a lot of things, because there's a specific moment that I think is kind of important to talk about in the annals of Survivor here. But I want to talk about this conversation that happens around Carolyn being emotional. And it feels to me, when this was happening, and we saw it coming from a bunch of different people, we're talking about how emotional Carolyn can be at times. Lauren mentioned it, Danny mentioned it, even Jeff went on mentioning it, and you know, Carolyn was talking about her lack of sleep and everything, giving us those Tony vibes of never sleeping, right? And it feels to me like Carolyn's just so, I guess disrespect is probably the best word for it, but I think she's just like completely underestimated, because we were talking about earlier in the episode, right? When she's pushing away her emotions to continue working with Jam Jam and Carson, right? She's showing that she's such a good gamer, that she knows what she's doing. Mm-hmm. And it seems here everyone's writing her off. And I feel like this is a common thing we see with women in the history of Survivor, right? Even like going back, we've talked about Cook Islands this episode. Becky kind of got that type of vibe, despite like being so closely aligned with Yule. And I mean, we've had many postseason interviews telling us that Becky was kind of one of the bigger minds of the two of them, came up with a lot of the plans and stuff. Mm-hmm. So Celestina, who are some women who you think have been underappreciated or underestimated, just like Carolyn?
Yeah, well, it's funny because one of the people I think that's underestimated is actually a winner. I think Michelle was one of those people that was really underestimated, because people didn't really understand the value of a really great social player. And they were just saying, well, you didn't really do all these like dynamic, elaborate moves. And she's like, you don't have to do a dynamic and elaborate moves to win. And I think that that's kind of at the end, people realized, oh, wow, like you could, you know, you can do more with that. I think, I mean, the same thing is, I think you see this a lot more in recent seasons of Survivor. So I will give recent seasons of Survivor credit and really showing that winners can win and be underestimated, because now people in Survivor are understanding the importance of social games and those social relationships. Whereas like old season, it was all about who made the big moves and who was like the most iconic, really. I mean, you even see that with Erica, just as a recent winner too. Like, you know, she didn't really, I mean, I think a big part probably is like editing, but just even from a perspective of like, you know, people aren't really seeing the internal of what people are actually doing, you know, their game, because they're like, well, you just talked with people, you got to know them. That to me is not impressive. But if you think about Survivor is so much a social game, connecting with people, these meditative moments, those moments matter to people. And at the end of the day, the most important thing is the fact that the jury gets to vote. And if they think that, you know what, this person who has like 8 idols, that was impressive, but this person the entire time wanted to get to know me. They remembered my kid's name. They, you know, they took the time to get to know me. They brought me into their like loyalty, you know, those types of things matter. And so I think that I just think about a lot of women, and especially like you get a lot of older women too, that are, that are underrepresented. I mean, you get, especially during the earlier seasons of Survivor, you get women older women that are typically the first voted off because they are just like perceived as like, oh, well, you know, they're weaker or, you know, they don't really know what's happening in the game. They're just here to, you know, be here. So there's a lot of women like that, but I'm glad to see kind of it's progressing into something that's actually really valued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we see a lot of, like you said, with Michelle, like we see a lot of winners who are like that. Like Erica was like that in 41. Mary Ann's even, I mean, I'm not here saying that Carolyn's winning this season. I will save judgment for that for 2 weeks until I actually definitively know. I think Carolyn has a good chance to win this season. But Mary Ann, of course, in 42 was pretty underestimated until an idol play, right? Until someone else played an idol on her, mm-hmm. but still, and like having that hidden information and stuff. So that's something Carolyn's kind of doing as well, like that. I mean, we talked about Samoa. Natalie White is kind of viewed this same way, right? Where it's like, feels emotional, doesn't feel like she's doing any strategy or anything like that, is connecting with people, is bonding with people, ultimately wins against someone who had that flashy idol game, had mm-hmm. that like flashy game in Russell, right? And we have Natalie come out on top. So there's been appreciation for it, and it's underappreciated. I mean, Natalie White was kind of one of the more maligned winners for a long time. And mm-hmm. I think we're finally at a point where that's not the case anymore. And people are really respecting her game a lot more.
I think when we see winners like that, people mm-hmm. go back and they're like, oh, well, this person basically did the same thing, but it wasn't, not saying socially acceptable, but it, like, you know, for an older season of Survivor, can't believe I'm saying that Samoa's an older season of Survivor, but at that time, flashy moves were king, you know, like that's mm-hmm. what people thought and respected. And I was at that point when I started watching Survivor, I was like, oh my gosh, now, even though I liked Natalie, I was like, what did she do? You know, mm-hmm. and there, but now we see beyond that. And I think that's probably one of the best current aspects of Survivor now is that people are actually seeing beyond those flashy moves.
Yeah, I agree. But let's talk about flashy moves for a second, because I want to talk about like maybe like the antithesis of flashy moves or like intended flashy moves that don't go the way people intend them to. Because one of the big things that happens in this episode is Carolyn decides, okay, I have the Tika idol. I'm going to play it for Carson because I need Carson moving forward. I think it's a good move because I do think we've been told the entire episode, Tika, as long as we have the numbers, as long as there are three of us, like we can control the votes moving forward. So Carolyn doing something that guarantees the preservation of that three, huge. But, big but, Carolyn plays an idol and didn't need to because the majority of the votes were not on Carson. Now, granted, that could be because she didn't trust Lauren. And I'm assuming it's because she didn't trust Lauren and Jamie to actually split like they were supposed mm-hmm. to, put the two votes on Heidi. But this is far from the first time we have seen an idol played for someone unsuccessfully. So let's go back and look through some of these moments. Let's look at the first one, Celestina, from your favorite season. Let's talk Fiji. Because at the merge in Fiji, well, okay, the second merge vote in Fiji, because we have that whole Michelle Yee vote thing, which we don't count as the merge because they were two separate tribes still.
Yeah.
We have the four horsemen. We have Mookie playing the idol. But Edgardo is the one who garners all the votes and ends up going home.
Yep. That was like what I love about, I mean, Fiji is just a mess, that's basically why it's like my favorite season. But what's so interesting about these moments is like how one person can really just impact everything. I mean, you had Dreams, who was kind of in the middle, like he had a relationship and a bond with Earl and Yao Man and that, and Cassandra, that side. But then he was also really ingrained in the Four Horsemen Alliance. I mean, was one, you know, essentially one of them. And basically because they didn't tell him that they had this idol and they divulged that to him later, he lost trust in them and was like, I'm going to tell them. And then it kind of spiraled and, you know, and that's how, I mean, this ended up happening because people were switching. And then, you know, Alex, or we're talking about that episode, right? Where Alex played the idol. Yeah. Alex played the idol on himself. But you know, Edgardo was the one who ended up going home, you know, and also what I love about all of these is that there is an element of luck because you could give it to somebody and it would and be correct. And that's always what's so exciting about an idol play, is that you never know. You could be right, you could be wrong. And so that's kind of what it's kind of like, that exciting element of it. And so, yeah, always have to mention a Fiji reference, you know?
Yeah, of course. And it's really interesting because obviously, like, Fiji was the first instance where this could happen, that an idol could be played incorrectly, because previous to that, like, obviously the Guatemala idol had to be played before the votes were read and gave immunity. And then for Panama and Cook Islands, it was the super idol, so it had to be played afterwards. We have, and we, there are so many idol plays like this, we can't possibly talk about them all right now.
That's a whole podcast.
Yeah, it's a whole podcast unto itself. But we have something like Gabon, where Sugars had the idol the entire game, and it's the Crystal Boot. This is a wild episode of Gabon, and we talked about South Sea's favorite. We have to talk about one of my favorites now. This is the boat. This is the Crystal Boot. So this is when Bob wins individual immunity, says he'll give it to Kenny if he feels like Kenny could be going home, then doesn't give it to Kenny, and then Sugar plays her idol on Maddie for no reason, really, and Crystal goes home. A lot of this happens at, like, Final Six. Final sixes are weird when it comes to idol plays, because, you know, you hold on to it one more and you guarantee yourself Final Four because it's the last time you can use it. But, like, it's risky, so people tend to play their idols at Final Six a lot. Mm-hmm. Samoa, we were already talking with the Eric Cardona boot at the merge. That is, there's an idol misplayed there because Russell plays his idol there. Somehow Eric doesn't play his idol in response, because cascading idols, it's okay. Not too common, actually. And then the following season, Heroes versus Villains, we see Russell play his idol at the Amanda boot.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the first one that I thought of, because when we were going through and thinking about moments, the first thing that popped in my head was Parvati saying, "You wasted it." And I was like, "Where was that from?" And then I had to go back, and that's kind of what I thought about the first one, was that moment.
Yeah, and then we have Caramon. We're going back to episode 9 of Caramon because we're covering it on the Patreon. In that episode, Reynold plays his idol for Malcolm, and Mike Snow is the one who goes home. So at the Kageon merge, like, again, another one of these iconic episodes where we have LJ play an idol for Tony. Tony plays an idol for LJ. Neither of them get any votes. All the votes are on Jeffra. Doesn't matter, though, because Sarah goes home. Like, we have these iconic moments with these type of, like, misplays in idols. And it leads into a lot of conversation of, like, what is a misplay for an idol, right? Obviously, LJ and Tony are securing their alliance there. Yeah. Even when we're looking at, like, Sugar and Maddie in Gabon, they're securing an alliance, right? Russell's playing an idol on himself. Whatever.
That's typical Russell.
But it's these idols that are played for someone else. And yes, Carolyn plays her idol for Carson, ultimately wastes it, is going into a Final Six. Would she be in a better position with that idol? Absolutely. But she doesn't have it now. But what she does have is an incredibly tight alliance with Carson and Jam Jam to leverage moving forward.
Yeah, and I think it's important too, like, and taking a look at all of these different instances. I mean, like you were saying, LJ, the LJ one. I mean, they're trying to, you know, just make it to the next place, secure their spots. But this one was very interesting because it was like, it is one, you know, it's one of us, and there was an element of risk in it. But I think that even though it was wasted, it was important that she did do that, because from her standpoint, it doesn't make sense that that Lauren and Jamie work with them. Like, I would have even thought that, okay, it doesn't make sense. I'm not putting my eggs in that basket. So I think she was even probably shocked. Oh, they did do that. So it would be such a big risk, I think, for her not to play it. It's just unfortunate that did happen. But I think in that instance, like, for a technicality, it was wasted. But I think the intention behind it was, it was good that she did play it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So before we close this episode, we have Danny leave with his De Niro impression. So, Sina, what great Survivor impression moments do we have that you recall really well?
Well, one of the few, I guess, highlights from Worlds Apart is we have Rodney doing his impressions. And it, I think that's memorable because everybody was just mad at Rodney. They were so annoyed. Jen was so annoyed with him. She was hating everybody. And I just remember she was like, I don't want to be here. And then all of a sudden he was like making these impressions and she's like dying of laughter. And so that was a highlight for me because, you know, it kind of gives a little bit of humor, but it's the first time I ever saw somebody do it when they were leaving. And then they continue it and they're confessional. I was shocked and I didn't know it was a De Niro reference until someone told me. I was thinking it was like Popeye or something.
Right. Yeah, he was interesting. He said he was going to give the De Niro face and he gave the De Niro face. Like, I understand what he's going for. It was weird. It was a weird choice.
It was
weird how long it went on for. I kind of like that Jeff kind of gave him the blanks there, though. I was just like, what are you doing? I'm going to let you finish, and then I'll continue to do what I'm doing.
I've never seen Jeff as, like, speechless about something. He's like, oh, this is still happening, but okay.
Yeah,
absolutely. Let the cameras roll.
All right, we're at the end of the episode. Celestine, do you have any other closing thoughts about the episode?
No, it was a great episode. I came out being like, you know what? This is a good episode. I'm glad I get a podcast about it because, like I said, the post-merge is turning out to be really well, but, you know, obviously some episodes are better than others. And so I thought this is a very good episode. And I'm pleased to kind of see what unfolds after this.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And you know what other season has a post-merge that turns out to be significantly better than the pre-merge? It's Paramoan. And Celestine and I are going to be talking about that for the Patreon. All you $10 and $20 patrons, you are going to get that in your Patreon feed tomorrow to check out. That's episode 9 of Karamoan. It's a great episode, actually. Having watched it today, it's a very entertaining episode. Definitely gets way more flack than it deserves. But next week, McKenna will be back. It'll be me and McKenna. Once again, we're going to be talking penultimate episode of 44 next week. How exciting is that? We're always at the end of the season. Hard to believe. Phil and Alexa are going to do their... I know this week was a little different. We had Phil and I do our movie buff specialist right after the episode. But next week, don't worry. Phil and Alexa will be back with you to recap that penultimate episode right afterwards. But before that, on Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern, they will be joined by the winner of Ghost Island, Wendell Holland, who is going to be doing the predictions and power rankings with them for that penultimate episode. $20 patrons, Phil's after show is there ready for you to listen to. If you haven't already, make sure you like and subscribe. Click that bell for notifications so you know when all these things happen. So when a weird programming time like Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern happens, you know when someone's going live.
Yep.
And with that, we will see you all next week. Have a good night.
Thanks for having me.